isn't starting at zero. Close enough. What I didn't ask you about last time was some biographic. Like, where were you born? Where were you born?
Waterloo, Bull Bridge.
Bull Bridge.
Yeah, Tuckaday. And Page of Tuckaday.
Waterham Arms, what's that?
Waterloo.
Is that the name of the house?
Yeah, it's a pub. It's a public ocean.
Oh, you were born in the pub, were you?
Oh, in the pub. That's why I'm a teetotaler.
And you said you were born in 1914. And so your father owned the pub.
He didn't then, but he did.
They worked in the pub at the time? Or no, your mother?
Yeah, well, the father.
They rented it.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Mm-hmm. And they became the owners later.
And so your parents, were your parents papermakers? Or in the papermaking, not from the papermaking family at all?
Yes. Grandfather.
Your grandfather was
On the mother's side was a papermaker.
And what, did he work as a fitter, or did he work in
a papermaker.
As a in the bathroom?
Yeah. Well, he did originally, but he ended up putting in the, because as they got older, they used to go into the regos and dryers and that sort of thing. It was, foreman of the regos before he retired.
And what was his name?
Hoik.
And his first name? It's a test. Do you know Pearl? No. All right, we'll leave it go.
It's his grandfather.
We'll just call him Mr. Pike. Now, on your mom's side, your mother's name was?
Mother.
These are some tests. It's like.
What's her name?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Daisy.
All right, and your father's name?
Bert.
All right, we got him. And so he was a Wakeham then.
They were farmers.
From the Wakeham side, yeah. Well, that's, the farmers is the natural inclination towards working on things then, huh? Okay, so, did you go to school?
Oh, yeah.
There in
Ashburton Church School.
I see. In Ashburton, so you had to walk there, but it's not too far? 6 miles?
No, but not up to 4 miles.
And how old were you when you went to school? Do you remember?
Started at 5.
Yeah.
Before.
And 14. You.
14 was at school.
And what did you do then?
Not long.
Really? For how long?
Actually, I became a motor mechanic, but I never did an apprenticeship as a motor mechanic. I was just sort of fell in it.
Yeah.
When you were 18, 19.
So you worked at the farm and then joined the army?
About five years.
Yeah, okay. And did you, I can't quite get the years right. Was that when a war was going on?
No. That was done before.
So it was in between the two wars that you were in service. So you if it was, that was during the Depression then, so you would have, you do national service kind of job?
Yes, really, that's when I joined, it was during the Depression. No jobs for motor mechanics, and I didn't want to stay on the farm, and I joined the little tank corps.
Yeah. And after that, you returned, after that, what was next?
I came back and became a motor mechanic.
And did you, what did a motor mechanic do at the time?
Everything on a motor car.
So it was like a garage mechanic would be.
Yeah.
And maybe did you work? Did they have a equivalent to a gas station at the time?
Yeah. Oh yes.
But he didn't do that.
No. I was a mechanic when I was on engine overhauls.
And where did you work?
Cylinder boring. Engine over your house and skeletons.
Here in Tottenham?
Yes.
And where did you live at the time? In Tottenham?
Harbinton Ford.
So you lived in Harbinton Ford?
Yes.
Which is about...
Four or five miles.
Did you have a car at the time, or did you walk in and out?
Motor scooter.
You had a motor scooter?
Yeah.
Okay, so... How did it happen that you started working at the mill?
In the motor business, I started doing cylinder reboring, cylinder boring, and apparently I was good at it.
Yeah.
And they started giving me more and more. In fact, the local gardens doing all the swimming boards, all the damages all round and out. All the time I was boring something. I was bored with it. Quite bored with it. And this job came out, took it in. And, I'm going to try it, and I went out.
So how did you hear about the job?
They approached him.
They approached me, actually, said, you know, that would I be
interested. Get a reliable maintenance man.
Now, who was the owner then?
Milburn was the owner then, of the Milburn itself, but they sold up during the couple of weeks that I was transferring out there. And I said, so did the other gentleman, Allison.
So that it was sold just right when you moved there?
Yeah.
Now, did they have other, okay, so the job that you had, what was it? You said one time you told me it's called the fitter. Was there another name for the job, or?
Well, they called it a fitter, actually, because it was general maintenance on the machinery. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, when I started there, there was only a carpenter who had been there for years, and myself. And they did electrical equipment to the mechanical stuff, turning, everything, welding, forge work.
Yeah.
Generally ran the machinery. The main power there was a gas engine, producer gas, 130 horsepower, Russell and Hornsby.
And that's spell the name of that, because I when I listened to the tape, I thought, oh, it's a Rusting Hornsby engine, like it was a really old one, but I know that's wrong.
R-U-S-T-O-N.
Rusting, okay.
Rusting. I think originally it was Rusting and Hornsby, but it shortened to Rusting Hornsby. It's a well-known firm, and it still makes stuff now. And I should have called it the Rusting Hornsby gas engine.
And how did they get the gas?
It produces own gas, you just put coal in a retort. And it's made its own gas, you know. Producer gas engine, they call it, actually. And also...
Wasn't coal on the anthracite they use, on it not coal?
Well, yes, that's the issue.
It's a form of a refined coal,
very hard coal. Anthracite, you know, Welsh. So, and of course it's a water turbine as well.
So, this brings up a question to me. I know that in talking to some other papermakers, that really to be a papermaker seemed like the only way people got the jobs was pretty much being the son of a papermaker. People just sort of didn't say, oh, I think I'll be a papermaker and sort of sign up because the jobs are sort of all taken up by families. Does that seem to be the case pretty much?
Pretty much, yeah.
But it wasn't, but for the...
Were a few sort of filtered in, like farm laborers' sons went there as boys and cleaning up and messing about and got into it. But largely they were papermakers.
And how about for the jobs like the fitter job? Do you think, was there ever sort of a following of fitters?
Didn't seem to be, no. I mean, a chap told me he'd been there for, 30 years or something like that.
He came there after the
first
world war. He came there and I don't think he was there before the war, was he?
I don't think so. Richard Cam, he was called.
Say the last name?
Cam.
C-A-N?
C-A-N-N.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I know some Meccans. And,
oh, yeah.
He was there through the 20s.
And he was the fitter before you that did
30s,
that sort of...
And 40s, so when Cam took over.
I see. Mm-hmm. Now, specifically, I was interested in a couple of things. One thing was about the molds and what you were called on to do with the mold when you, as a fitter. Did you ever have to make anything new up, like a new deckle, or was there a mold maker that you had that you...
Actually, the carpenter used to make, if it was, mostly the deckles were made by people up country,
yeah.
Maidstone, Kent, and a firm, oh dear. Can't remember their name, though.
Did we get an accident out there?
No.
Yeah, that was Ron Ames.
Oh, no.
Ames, probably.
Yeah, Ames.
Okay, so the other guy, the Chippy, what was his name, the carpenter guy?
Perce Willing. Willing.
Okay, Perce, P-E-R-C, from Percival, right?
Percy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Williams?
Willing. And his father has been the carpenter at the mill before him, and I think his father before him.
So that was a pretty much a follow down the line.
Yeah.
And he did all the woodwork.
So he
would do the mold woodwork?
Yeah, mold woodwork.
But if it was wire work, is that where you'd be called on? Is that the difference? Or did he do the...
He did a bit as well, but I used to do most of it.
If they needed a new watermark?
No. Rarely put a new... If it was a complete new watermark, went to Amy's, but used to make pieces of them and change the date of them. Very often the date was, you know, this year, and they'd change it for the... make the lettering up for that and that sort of thing.
Did you sell most of the watermarks, or were they soldered?
Pretty well soldered on. They didn't like soldering. I preferred soldering myself, but they wouldn't. I tried to get them to, but they always saw that the solder left a mark. Not because of the... I'll point out that I could solder them without... You know, you can get a big blob of soldering on you. I could do it without that any trouble. But they swore that the different metal made a mark in the pavement, but quite honestly, I never saw any solder.
Yeah. Okay, let me see. Well, okay, so then how did your family, what was your family's relationship to papermakers?
Well, my grandfather was a cop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kitty, cop.
Yeah, I know Kitty, right?
He came down from Maidstone. With Arthur Milburn when he started the mill at Tuckenham, what was that, 1889?
Oh, and was there a paper mill here before?
Yeah.
Yeah, Simons and Turner, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. But when Arthur Milburn took over, he bought a nucleus of professionals from Maidstone and some from Wolfie Hole, and Tom's granddad came from Wales. Anyway, he brought papermakers from all over. Some from Wales, handmade paper mills.
So was the mill here a hand mill when he bought it, or was it not working at the time? Or was it closed
down?
It
had been a hand mill originally, and then it became a mold mill, and it didn't pay. And then when the internal
Simon's
time,
yeah.
They rebuilt it.
As a hand mill? Mm-hmm. And so when Milbourne bought it was a running mill, or had it gone into bankruptcy?
No, it was a running
mill. Milburn was the manager, paper maker of the mill for,
Simmons? Tyler
Simmons? Yeah, Simmons himself.
Yeah.
Because Simmons put in this paper machine, an Escher Voice incidentally, that made paper on the mould, same as handmade, dip and shake.
Really?
Yeah. Did have a blueprint.
Oh, you told me about that, yeah.
I don't know what happened to it in there. But the point is, Simmons was, as the owner, he was a bit against the, I think they called themselves the Paper Association or something, it was the Paper Makers Union.
Yeah.
And I'd him for making paper
Oh, so the paper makers wouldn't work for him?
That's pretty.
Yeah.
So he brought in local labour
and
taught them to make paper. He must have been a paper maker himself, I think, but he knew how to do it anyway. He wasn't one. But he taught them, and they were making paper, and the paper making association called them scowbankers. I don't know if you've run into that word.
I heard the word, but I didn't ever know. Sort of, I don't know what its origination was.
The scowbankers there were the people who were not apprentice paper makers, who were making paper. And they were making paper, and they were making a good job of it. And they Baptist Paper Association managed to get him outlawed with the paper trade, so he couldn't sell his paper.
Mm.
And so all his stock piled up, and he just actually packed the old lot in, closed the mill down, and so he went off and sold it for apparently a song. And some local businessmen floated a firm, and they took the name and they put Arthur Milburn in at the head of it.
Because he was working here at the time?
He was a paper maker, and they called it Arthur Milburn Company, and he, I think, bought them out gradually, or somewhere, and then eventually it became Milburn's own, anyway.
I see, and so he then got regular paper makers with the car,
yeah.
The legal paper makers.
He brought them in from all over.
Union men, like, and also we demolished the paper machine, smashed it up, and put in handbats in
the
paper machine, this actual voice. There's a lot of stories about it, where they've got the paper machine, put clinkers and all sorts of things in it, jam it up, but old Puss Willen, who was where this was a carpenter.
Yeah.
His father's done.
His father was the engineer, carpenter there, and they, told him all about it. He said that the paper this machine made was, they couldn't distinguish it from the handmade paper. That's what they worried about, because it was the same part, the molds that went in. And
so it was, so that's why the paper makers didn't like it, because it was too... Okay, so both of your grandfathers then came to the area because of Milburn asking for paper makers.
Yeah.
You're from the Cox's family. Your family was the...
Yeah.
Your paper making side of the family was...
Yeah.
What was the last name?
Pike.
Pike, right. And they came from...
Harry Pike, I'm not sure.
And where do you come from? Wales, you say?
Basingstoke.
There's a mill there.
Yeah, there's a mill.
Yeah.
Okay,
now...
They used to call themselves journeymen, largely, and they used to go from mill to mill all over the country.
I've heard about that.
Journeymen, they used to call them.
But I think
Hold on, wait. I'll come back in a second. Let me follow this up, or it gets too confusing if people talk at once. So, they wander around?
Yeah, the journeymen, they should travel in the country from mill to mill. And one of the union rules was a journeyman came to the mill, he could claim a few days' work anyway, enough to say I'm going again, like, and they had to give him the work.
And what sort of work would he do?
Oh, make him pay.
Work at the vat, or would they make him do the worst job, or could he do any job?
Basically, he'd be a vatman, but they put a vatman was supposed to do all the work. Because actually, when we worked at that, we had a batman, a creature, a mayor, and it was a three, and perhaps a boy. But they all had to do the job because they used to change out. The batman used to get tired.
Yeah, so did.
Same thing, and then they'd change over, like, for so long.
Did you notice that they always changed over? Did you know some people stuck always with cooching if they could have?
Well, they always did a chucking.
So at Chuck and Ada, you saw them always rotating. Nobody stuck with one job.
No, they always change over. I think the batmen do the bulk of the bat work, right? But the others take a turn to turn out for them.
No, this brings up something. I heard somebody, I guess Cyril was saying that they'd try to get so that they could, if they got good enough, then they'd let them change out for them, the people that were learning. The point of it is, do you think that the traveling paper makers would just be the change out job, or were they just put as one of the three on the team?
Well, quite honestly, I never saw journeymen while I was at Chuck and Mill. The journeymen that appeared to more or less died out. I think they died out somewhere at the time of either after the First World War or before. And there never seemed to be any after seeing in China.
All right.
But it ought to be something.
Yeah, well, let's move back to Grandfather Cox now. It'll be confusing, but he came from Maidstone and
I think he actually did his apprenticeship at Wolfie Hole.
Mm-hmm.
He moved to because he had brothers and all that still at Wolfie Hole, and his father still lived at Wolfie Hole.
Move that paper and he can't spot that. So, I know when I was at Maidstone talking to one of the veterinarians, they were saying how the Coxes were one of the families
that's
there.
That's right, They sort of, you know, went to and fro between males, I think.
Okay, so, and he married, your grandfather Cox was, do you remember what that name was, who that was, did I ask already?
Pardon? What?
Your grandfather, what was his first name, his Christian name?
Frank.
Frank, okay, and he married, who did he marry, your grandmother, do you know?
Susie Wybrow was my grandmother, but his wife died.
Uh-huh.
My grandmother died, and he came down Tuckenhay.
Wifeless, when he came to Tuckenhay?
Yes, and he married Susie Eden, a local girl in Tuckenhay. That was Sam's father.
So Sam was born from Susie Eden and...
Yes, in Tuckenhay.
And
older brother.
And Ron Eden then must be somehow related to those Eden families.
Yeah, Ron was Ron's granddad was Susie's brother.
Brother, okay, right. So was the Eden family a papermaking family before Susie married Sam Cox, you think?
Oh,
I don't know.
Yeah.
They would have been a lot, they would have worked in the mill there all along.
They were there. I think they were more, how do I put it, on the labouring side, the papermaking side, but they were in the mill.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. What, in our last conversation, I became interested in the labouring side. I'm interested in what you have to say about sort of that side of the team that helped make the paper.
Yeah,
because you can't say that the back guys are the ones that made the paper.
My dad was a labourer. He worked in the... where they pump the paper.
The beater?
Beater house he worked there.
Okay, so your father's name was?
Frank Bastin. And he worked...
And how did it get from Cox to Bastin?
My mother was a Cox.
And your father?
Was Bastin.
And did they work... was he a Tuckenay? Born or Tuckenay, sort of region
local,
area?
Local.
And did they work in the paper mill?
No. No, he went into the paper mill to work.
Was your family, the Bastin family farmers then?
Farm laborers,
yeah.
And, I'm trying to think, he went into the mill with old Frank Cox, who was a beater man before Sam and his other brother took over, but the old Frank Cox, he took his son-in-law in as his help the beater house. That's how he got the job.
Mm-hmm.
In those days,
Right. Jobs
were a bit short, so he got the job.
So your father worked in the beater room.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember him telling stories about things that happened? Any of this? That if you pried down in your mind, you could pull up? Like the wrong kind of... things about rags, would he bring stories like those home, or did they mostly stay at the shop?
Mostly stayed in...
Do you know much about...
When the old foreman was there, who was Aiston...
Spell that, please. Do you think...
Aiston.
Yeah.
He was Puff Aiston, and he came to the mill with Milbourne, another one that came from Maidstone.
Right.
And he was the foreman, but if the papermaker said to him, this stuff is wrong, it's a long length, or can't make it because it's too short or something, he would get the mould and go and make a sheet.
Yeah.
Or two, and get them coached, and then say, look, if I can do it, you can do it.
If you can't, go.
he was a real paper maker.
So how often did it happen that they'd beat a load that would be unmakeable?
Not often.
No.
The paper makers liked to complain because they could stop work legitimately and get paid. So if they had a complaint, they had to get the foreman
all this stuff is wrong. And if the Biedermanns had done it too,
yeah.
I mean, occasionally things went wrong. Perhaps what do they call it? The bar that went down. The roll went down too hard, and they broke it a bit short, the length, or it didn't go down quite hard enough. And during the night, somebody let down a load that was perhaps a bit long.
What do you remember, Tom, from being in the mill? Do you remember them actually ruining a beater load very often that was legitimate, or just?
No, I don't think it was a lot of trouble like that.
No.
We had a bit of bother along with the table machine in, getting the length right for that.
Yeah.
That's
interesting.
Sometimes the colours would be quite right, you know, and the foreman would come along and say, you know, well, they put in the correct amount of what he'd given them. You
right,
know,
but it didn't come out right.
The foreman always weighed up the colour.
Oh, yeah.
And took to the Biedermann.
Oh, that's interesting. Because I saw in Sam's, in those books you had, it said how much of something.
Right. Well, the foreman kept the key. I mean, the Biedermann would often go to and ask for the key and...
Oh, for the colours.
For the colours, you see. And sometimes there'd be an argument that one lot of was slightly, you know...
Different colours?
When they take a sheet off a pack, take it up to be dried,
mm-hmm.
and then they compare it with a waterleaf sheet of a previous make and say, that this isn't... But in those days, they just continued to make that load anyway, and that was put into stock.
If it was for an order, you mean?
Yeah, if it was for an order, they'd make another make sure that they...
Another beaterful, huh?
Beaterful to go down.
So, did your father...
They didn't throw out that,
right.
was what I'm trying
I
to
see
say.
What you're saying now, yeah.
Yeah, they'd finish out the so many packs, and that would be marked... for stock, you see, and then somebody come along and want perhaps so much medium or demi or blade or
rogue
or something or other. I mean, there was odd orders always coming in,
mm-hmm.
a few reams of this, that and the other, and then this stock would come out, but it was always finished right through the process.
Right.
And then put in the stock room as stock.
Okay, Your name, Pearl, and then what was your last name when you were born?
Bastion.
Bastion.
No.
P-E-N.
B-A-S-T-E-N.
Okay. Got to get that right on here or else I will never figure it out. Okay, and do you mind saying when you were born?
21.
Okay. Just one, in case you were shy.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm living on borrowed time, you see.
Did you go to school, too?
Yeah. That's
the same, till 14?
Mm-mm.
And then what did you do?
Went into the mill.
And what did you do in the mill?
First of all, I went into the dryer, and taken out the tape from the dryer.
And they had the roll dryer, I mean the mechanical dryer.
Yeah.
And was that considered a better job or a worser job?
Oh, it was a hot job, not a good job. You got out of there when you could. And then I went up to the size house, which was cooler but damper. And... that was better, but I got about 16, I thought, 16 and a half. I wasn't enough doing this, so I got a job minding, you know, mother's help.
Uh-huh.
That's what I so I left the mill then. I went back later when they were hard up for workers and did a bit.
And what would you do when you went back? Same thing or different jobs?
Helping sorting and on the rolls and different jobs then. It was only sort of part time, so I sort of fitted in where they wanted somebody then.
And did it seem that it took, you didn't have special skills except for maybe, so it didn't take any special skill to do any of the jobs that you did?
Didn't take a lot of special skills.
The sorting, I was told.
But then, how do I put it? It was, you either picked up a I mean, we roughly sorted things. All the good sheets were put out, and all the real broken were put out, and then we put in a pile for retrieve, which one of the experienced sorters would sort through and do about 3 or 4 grades of retrieve, you know, sort of some that would just, that they could lift a tiny piece of fibre off, or take a rough deco off, and that. And that would be sent away for best retrieve then, and the experts would do that. But, I mean, anybody could sort through in the 3 grades. Good paper, something that could be saved, or the waste.
And did...
Anybody could do that. I mean,
what was the percentage, can you remember, when on the times you did it? Did it seem like it was pretty even?
Well, the brokens, they were thrown out all the way through. When you came through, when you dried them, if it was too broken, you threw them out then before it went through, and then it went back in to be repulped. In the size house, you threw out bad broken again. So when it was rolled, they threw out anything that was really bad. So it really, a lot of the broken was gone before it came to the actual sorting.
So when you sorted, your pile would be mostly good and or mostly retrieved, or mostly...
I should imagine about half and half with a small percentage of broken.
That's sort of what you remember.
Yeah, as far as I remember. But the experts would sort of go through the retrieve and sometimes make it a good sheet.
Mm-hmm. Now you said they wanted the decal to be really a... Trim the decal. Did they want a very conforming decal, or did they want a wilder decal? What was?
Yeah, wilder. Well, mostly, you know, the decal edge was sort of the hallmark of most of the paper, and yet you see there was some where they used the guillotine and cut it all off.
So if the decal edge looked too straight, usually they
have a picking knife.
Ah, interesting. I remember you mentioned before. Oh no. Was there any way you can make... Did the working of the mold and decal make any difference for how the...
Picking knife.
Yeah.
That's what they used. It was sharp. And
I've seen these. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was mine.
This was yours.
Yeah,
because Kitty had one, too.
That's right, yeah.
Do these show up in the antique stores around here? I'd love to have one someday. No, they're...
I shouldn't think. I mean, this is... When it was... you used it, you took it down to the carpenter's shop, and he would really make that point.
Uh-huh.
Sort of lethal, you know.
Yeah.
So you'd take a tiny spot of dirt off a sheet.
Yeah.
And make no hole or anything. What I'm trying to say...
Yeah, you slice right in, just like a surgeon, right?
Yeah, just take it out like that, and,
uh-huh.
and then you would
rub
never
it back
see
down.
It. Yeah, you'd never see the... When the expert did it, you'd never see it.
That's great.
Hmm. And then they used to dip certain paper. That was a terrible job. I never got into doing that. They had a vat of what they called Lexpar, wasn't it? Legal papers were dipped, hand-dipped.
Is that to make them parchmentized?
Yeah, that was the idea, yeah.
So the process, were they sized when they were dipped, or were they not yet sized? Do you remember?
It was after they were sized,
yeah.
And they were all smooth, and then they were dipped.
And were they glazed before they were dipped, or?
No, I don't think they were glazed.
Is that what you say, rolled? I mean rolled?
Yeah. And then they would, that paper very often would hot pressed afterwards, so it had a real, after this dip was on and it was dried again, then rolled in the zinc plate, you know, through, and then it would be hot pressed. But the hot press was sort of not zinc, was it? The plate.
I don't know.
No, but what they put between the paper.
Oh,
they weren't zinc, were they?
Yeah, zinc And what I saw, there was a large, like a, what was it, oven. They put these iron plates in, they'd be half inch thick.
Uh-huh.
And they, all these plates were put in there, and steam put on them to raise the temperature.
The plates?
Yeah,
these iron plates.
Was it critical, the temperature they were?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Because it used to blow off the iron,
well,
the oven, didn't
it? Yeah. Get up to, I mean, the temperature would be about 212, because it wasn't under great pressure,
mm-hmm.
But they used to have to handle it with felt, and they used to put one of these plates, a zinc liner, and then so many sheets of paper, just depending on what sort it was, I suppose. Another zinc liner, another iron plate, and so on, build up, and I'd like press, and then...
It would press, was it
under pressure.
And just leave it standing under pressure?
Yes.
Yeah.
Until they were cold.
So they make that big, so that those would have already been rolled once, right?
Oh, yes.
So they're rolled, then they put that hot plate, and then just put them in a standing press and just leave them under pressure until they cool down.
Yeah.
Interesting. And how did that affect the paper? Could you see it when it came out? It looked different? Hot press compared to just cold press? Or?
Yeah, much higher
surface,
you know.
More glazed, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was a higher, much higher glaze. But what they used it for, I have no idea.
I think there was a little more to it than that. I mean, it was so, they did very little, if any of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did a bit, but I think the packaging of it, both the hot pressing and the dipping. So I didn't see a lot of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, even the old chippy talking about it, they won't go down and look at him all the time. And they used to say these hot pressings, they put it up to, I think it's 1 ton of a square inch, the hydraulic pressure on these things, which is where the potato well blew off anyway. And the chap would go back and look at it after it didn't stand so long, the pressure would have died slightly. They put it up again, they put it up two or three times to keep the pressure pretty high, I guess.
So they used just as much pressure as they could, it didn't matter that it was 100. Whatever, they just blow it until the safety blew off on the hydraulic press.
Yeah, yes. And they tried to keep it up to that for quite a while, apparently. I know it used to, they'd be putting these things in the morning, like, you know, and they'd take them out the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So these plates were very hot and very heavy, and it took two men to put them down, and they had to be very careful.
Getting everything square.
Not to move the sheets, you know, underneath, or else it was ruined, you see.
Now, who would do this? Would somebody from the finishing room, or the paper maker
then? Yeah, usually it was the
dry
workers and the men working the rolls.
And what are the rolls?
Well, the phasing rolls.
And that's the machine where you feed the sheet through one side and somebody else puts a new piece of paper in and shoves it back in again?
No. That was in zinc plates.
So they make a pack, the sets of packs,
right,
and roll it, and the machine goes... Did the machine go that way and then back again?
Yeah.
They should roll it through and back.
Okay.
And usually turn it
and go the other way.
And back again.
Yeah.
But it was all done by, it was very...
Yeah, I've seen those machines at Wookiee Hall.
That's right. But a sheet of paper and a sheet of zinc. The way they did it was, the girls that did it was like this.
So a girl would load it up and then a man would run it through the press?
That's right, yeah. And while it was being pressed, she'd be doing another lot, but each...
Actually, there's usually two girls or women to one press, one man.
Yeah.
You know, put on them.
But they, there was two presses.
Yeah.
And one man usually working them. But there was sort of, the girls had two books of,
things.
Yeah. And the thing was, it was... whether they have another plate in, the finisher would tell them whether the finish was high enough, or if it was too high, he'd come and compare it.
Who's the finisher?
In my day, it was Mr. Howard.
Okay, and what are the jobs that he did as a finisher?
He'd be the dry worker.
Manager, he managed the women, and you know, he was...
Okay, so he would supervise, not the sizing?
No,
somebody
else was in charge.
So once it came once it was done.
Mm. I guess. He was in charge of the soul, the whole soul, which was the sorters, the rolls.
And the rolls mean what? Those machines we were just talking about?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
And the pressing.
And the pressing.
And what's the difference between the rolls and the pressing? This.
Well, they all got pressed. They used to put it in the presses and press it for so long. And that was before...
Commercial interruption there. Okay, so what I've been curious about is after the paper was made, run through the rolls, then it was left to stand in standing presses for some amount of time before it was sold. Is that true? Or is that not true? What do you remember?
Yeah,
it came with the presses.
Came up in the presses and sorted.
Mm-hmm.
And was taken up to the stockroom.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it was an order that had to go right away.
So if it didn't have to go right away, they put it in the stock room.
And sometimes stock was there for years.
And stock, would it be wrapped or would it be actually stuck in the standing presses?
Usually it was wrapped in greens and with a label.
Who did the wrapping?
The finisher.
Did you ever do wrapping?
Occasionally help the finisher, yes, if he was busy. Get one of the girls to, on the end of the bench.
Oh, so
or he had a boy, an apprentice, to do the wrapping.
An apprentice finisher? Somebody,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Somebody who was getting in line to be the supervisor of the finishing area.
That's right, a lad, usually. And they came along and they would carry it down through on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And go up in a little lift up to the stockroom.
And would it be stored in those standing presses or just wrapped up in paper and setting in piles? Do you remember?
Was always no presses there in the stockroom at all. Sometimes it was in wooden, well, mostly it was in wooden frames, off the floor.
Uh-huh.
But it was never put on the floor, not that the floor was wet or anything, but they always had air
underneath
it. And
how high would the stacks of greens be? Can you remember?
Up my height.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And would they stack only the same size, like fool's cap on fool's cap?
Yeah. It was basically makes.
Mm-hmm.
What
does makes mean? A certain size, or does everything do with the content of the fiber that made the paper?
No, what the watermark was the makes, whether it was for Spicer or.
Oh, okay.
Whichever.
So you could have couple of fool's caps, but one would have a different. They'd each have different, so they'd be called different makes.
Yeah.
Make had to do with the watermark.
That's right. Yeah.
What would be the mystery to me on this was that Spicer's foolscap and Arthur Milburn's foolscap and Bubble and Bond's foolscap were all different sizes.
I can't remember.
They were different sizes.
Half the name, now it's gone, there was Waternose, they had, it was mostly legal papers. The linen, pure linen, tough
thin,
paper.
Hard sized paper.
That you couldn't push your thumb through if you tried, This was really tough stuff. But I mean, then there was,
Vellum substitute,
split ups, which were envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
And writing paper, that was always had the deco edge on the split up, so that there was always a rough edge around the fancy writing paper.
So split ups was another, what you call a make? Or is that?
That were all different names.
Interesting.
They all had a watermark on it, with different watermarks, whoever wanted the paper. But they were difficult, because when they were wet, i.e. coming out of the size machine, if the deco edge was a little bit sharp, they would fall to pieces. But being split-ups, of course, it didn't matter so much, because you just collected up the pieces. But when it came to drying, the finisher and the dry worker complained bitterly because these small pieces were more difficult to dry.
That's great, yeah.
Mm. I mean, there was everything from elephants in the stockroom,
mm-hmm.
you know, elephant-sized paper. Imperial was the next size down, wasn't it?
I was going to say, the mystery to me was how they got Demoy was a size, which is obviously a devilish of Demi, isn't it? It's
yeah, right.
It evolved from Demi. And then they had double Demoy.
Right.
Double alpha.
So the whole.
Cat was always made, they didn't make cat, it was always double cat, which was two sheets.
Mm-hmm. And was double cap two sheets on the mold, or was the sheet actually double cap size? So it was, which one?
Well, it was both. Sometimes,
you could have
two sheets
uh-huh.
on the mold, but sometimes double caps, one big
sheet. So you'd have two different sizes of double cap paper.
That's right. Yeah, some was made for cap and some was double cap. You see, and medium size
probably only perhaps a half an inch difference.
But they were all different, you know. Yeah. The legal papers were nearly all made, but then the Batman made two sheets.
The legal papers mostly medium size.
Yeah, yeah. I said that the Batman had two sheets, which was a big
right
mold
really
for two sheets.
The deckle cut it in half.
And the deckle cut it in half, so there was two sheets.
Right, I've seen that.
Yeah.